As lies are to discord and wood is to fire, so coals of contention will kindle desire. The wounds of a liar are words. Let's start again. As lies are to discord and wood is to fire, so coals of contention will kindle desire. The wounds of a liar, as words or as treats, will burn from the belly its innermost meats. That was Proverbs chapter 26, verses 20, 21, and 22 from the Word Green version of 2004. And that's our daily proverb for today, little children. In the Trojan War article in chapter 12, which is the final chapter, one that we're doing right now, 2 days ago we looked at the graph of the trees and how they, the ancient trees, and how they represent the empirical evidence of the Bible chronology. Quite remarkably, very, very accurately, considering what one would expect there to be with regard to the uncertainties, so that we found that our deluge date of 3282 BCE is verified again by the trees. In addition to all the many other things we've been... Well, actually, our later chronology has many more proofs, but this time of the deluge is, of course, harder to prove because it's more ancient. And yet, the evidence of the... In the case of the trees, we showed that it worked. But the other thing was the radiocarbon dating of the arkwood. But the trees is empirical evidence. We don't do any human science very much to date the trees. It's just tree rings, counting the rings. So it's hard to deny the evidence of the trees. And now we're in paragraph 3 of chapter 12, which is where we want to review chapter 3 of our article, Trojan War, from 2015, that we're studying. And we're nearly finished now. I mean, we just have to review each chapter and we'll be done. Yesterday we looked at the tomb of Seti, who was the father of Ramesses II, and he was called Seti I, that pharaoh who was the father of Ramesses II. And Seti I had a tomb where we, from our later articles, we were able to obtain more information about when Sothis rose in the reign of Seti, which from the tomb painting appeared to be verifiable, both with regard to the length of his reign being about 10 years and some months, as well as the 4 consecutive years of Sothis rising on Thoth 1 during his reign, having been started in year 3 of his reign, according to the tomb painting. Very direct correspondence, a graphical correspondence, showing 10 squares consecutive, which evidently indicated the years of his reign, which some, such as Kenneth Kitchen, have indicated could be 11 years for his reign. Or at least, let's say, I think there's a year 11 attested. That's how we... So year 11 being attested, 10 years and some months, would be correct. And that's verified by the tomb painting for Seti. But more importantly, the time of the rising of Sothis is what appeared to have been indicated in the tomb painting. And that's what we verified yesterday as showing that if in our later articles, as we found out more about the reign of Horemheb and we were able to give a full 10 years to Seti without any co-rule for Seti with his son. We're not saying, of course, that there could have been co-rule, but at least there could have been something like 11 years of sole rule for Seti, and that means he reigned from 1326 to 1315 BCE. The years count backwards in the BCE years. And with SETI in 1326, then we went back to, since Ramesses the First, who was the father of SETI the First, since Ramesses the First only has an attested year 2, I believe it is, right? Is it 2 or 1? But whatever it is, he only has a year 2, which, I mean, determinable from the evidence that he could have reigned 2 years, at least from the documentary evidence. I mean, he could have, of course, also co-ruled with Horemheb for longer. And he could be the Ramesses who was given 4 or 5 years in Manetho along with his co-rule. But if so, let's say he co-ruled for 5 years with Horemheb, then we have Horemheb, or the beginning of Ramesses I, 5 years earlier than SETI, who began in 1326. That would be 1331 for Ramesses I, year 1. And then the 10 years given by Manetho for a king, I'm going to find out, see if I can find out where it is here. There it is, yeah. Whoops, that's not it. Where's my, that's the one I want, yeah. Fotheringham, Chronology of the Old Testament. Yeah, somewhere in here, it's close. We don't agree with Fotheringham's chronology. Of course, we just agree with, or we don't agree with Manetho, I guess, either. We're just using Manetho to see what we can learn from Manetho. So here's Manetho right here. And here we have, for example, SETI is given 55 years as the father of Ramesses here in Eusebius. We don't think he reigned for 55 years, but if you added 55 onto 1315, you'd get 1370, right? And that's getting back towards the beginning, but not quite all the way back to the beginning of Akhenaten's reign in his year 1, because the Egyptians, the priests, they didn't agree with Akhenaten because he worshipped the sun rather than the moon. So they tried to eliminate Akhenaten by giving more years to SETI, and thus eliminate all of that time period that followed Akhenaten on down, from Akhenaten to Tutankhamun, possibly some short reigns in between Akhenaten and Tutankhamun, and then Aya, who came after Tutankhamun, and Horemheb, who followed Aya, as well as Ramesses I. So they eliminated all of those, although when we look back, they may not have eliminated Ramesses I here if he was Ahmes, shown in the previous dynasty. That was Dynasty 19 from Fotheringham, page 123, for the SETI 55 years. But on the previous page, 122, Ahmes, as he's called by Africanus, in Dynasty 18, is given 5 years in both cases, and Ahmes, on the corresponding Manethan list given by Josephus, is given 4 years, 1 month, so 4 or 5 years. So let's say 5 years for Ramesses I, add on to 1326, which we just mentioned was 1331. Okay, but now we have Keres, who preceded, it's only on the list of Eusebius, he preceded Ahmes for 15 years. Now, because there was, 13, right, because, anyway, 13, we've figured out that the earliest date, based on work of Jared Miller, that could have been year one of Horemheb would be 1342. I believe that was because it was year nine of the Hittite king, Mursili II, whose year one was 1350, based on an eclipse. So 1342 is the earliest for Horemheb. So we put Horemheb at 1341, based on all of that. 1341 then down to 1331. Are we in the right century here? 1431 or 1331? 1331, right. So 1341 and 1331 could be Horemheb prior to the co-rule. But the co-rule of this five-year co-rule, this could be 5 years of co-rule here. In other words, the 15 years could be reduced to 10. Right? So that we have, because if the 5 years of Armes was included in the 15, which is, we're only doing this because of what we know about the chronology, we get 1341 down to 1331 when the co-rule began, and then we have the five more years, right, which makes 15 altogether. But the other thing was, yeah, there were only 13 or 14 years attested for Horemheb, so his rule evidently, if it began in 1341, it ended in about 1328. So that would still leave the 2 years of sole rule from 1328 to 1326 for Ramesses I, which is exactly in agreement with the fact that his year one or two, whatever it was, is attested. We have a witness for that, for one of those. I just can't remember whether it's year one or year two. It's written in the articles. It's in the articles if you look that up. For Ramesses I, I'm sure, I just can't think of where it is right at this moment. I've been doing some new research today on the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, looking at the radiocarbon to see if the fact that they date the destruction of the city that they thought could be Sodom was dated wrongly somehow, based on maybe we need to do a correction at that time of Abraham to the radiocarbon, perhaps. I don't know, but we don't, I mean, based on Whitelaw's correction. But I don't think that we already know we shouldn't have to correct, because we've seen the whole, all the radiocarbon work of the entire time period of dynastic Egypt, and it correlates well without doing the Whitelaw correction. It correlates at least all the way back to 2500 BCE. We don't believe we can correlate back to the deluge because of the, I mean, we don't need to correlate that. And that's what, but we can't, probably because there's so many things happening at the time of the deluge in the atmosphere of the Earth. The magnetic field changed. The magnetic field of the Earth changed at some point, maybe even at the time of the deluge. It just occurred to me now. And that could be why the cosmic rays then started to make their way into the Earth's atmosphere and cause the increase in the radiocarbon 14, which then led to the more consistent results that we get later after the deluge, as well as causing the shortening of the human lifespan. The human lifespan, not just the expectancy, but the lifespan of humans, which was greatly reduced after the deluge. And, you know, by some factor of 10 or something like that. So, because of these effects that happened at the deluge, we're not trying to date back all the way to the deluge. But, I mean, we of course we're trying, but we're not trying to do it without, I mean, nobody's done it, first of all. But we're not trying to do it without the awareness of the problem of the dating of rocks and all the problem of the worldwide flood stories, as well as the worldwide flood evidence. These huge plateaus with completely underfit rivers and huge amounts of erosion that were couldn't have been performed by rivers, because, I mean, the river, the size of the water flow required to do it was huge, and so it fits better with the theory of the worldwide flood, easily accommodates so much more evidence as well by doing it that way, by thinking that way, and also it accommodates the theory or the explanation, it accommodates the evidence of the Ice Age much better or more easily, certainly also as well. So, I mean, this overlap of the reign of Ahmes and Horemheb is what gives us 1341 to 1331 for the sole rule of Horemheb. Now, of course, if Horemheb had gone back to 1346 as his year one because he usurped the reign of Aya, that would explain the 15 years, too, from 1346 to 1331. I just thought of that now, which I don't think I've ever written that in the articles, but that's another one. Because Aya ruled for a number of years, but his reign was usurped at some point, maybe partway through his reign too, but it was usurped by Horemheb. And Keres appears to be the person called Horemheb. And we could do more research on how the name Keres relates to the throne name of Horemheb, but I haven't done that, because there are just so many things to do. It's really an amazing research proposition, but it's always rather intimidating. It can be frightening also when you are faced with the prospect at every turn of having your chronology overthrown completely by some result of one scientist who differs and has some proof. So it's very scary, and I haven't rushed, that's why I didn't rush into the other research about Sodom, I think, because it's always contradictory evidence that you find, at least in part. So Albright found that the pottery at Sodom, not Jericho, but Sodom, was early Bronze IV, is what he called it. But I think I just saw in a video, there's a great, great YouTube channel, magnificent channel. It's called Expedition Bible. What a great channel that is. Expedition Bible YouTube channel. Phenomenal. Amazing. And he even knows about the Paradise Earth. So it's really, he's got a lot of it, and he's found the river that corresponds to the Pishon River in the book of Genesis, the Pishon River being one of the rivers that flowed into the Garden of Eden, that provided one of the four heads of the rivers that flowed into the Garden of Eden, which is, according to his own video that he made about that, the Garden of Eden is located actually right near the Persian Gulf, which was one of the possibilities that has been proposed anyway, and he's more or less confirmed it by finding the river through Saudi Arabia. But other people found it too. On satellite images, they found this river through Saudi Arabia, and it's extremely wide for those types of rivers. But now the river which I grew up beside was a river 1 mile across and 500 feet deep. I think they said it was at least the deepest. It was the deepest inland river in North America. Deep River was the name of the town where I grew up, and the river where the Ottawa River, which was this, flowed by the town where I grew up, was this mile-wide river. And for us, that was normal, but in the land of the Middle East and Saudi Arabia, the rivers, even if it's more than 10 feet across, it's considered to be quite a big river. More than 10 yards across, 20 yards, 30 yards, whatever, that's a pretty big river indeed. And, you know, this river was probably, I think, I don't know if it's hundreds of feet across or what. It was, you know, many, many tens of yards across, I think, this river, Pishon. So, yeah, a very big river is what they found. It's still there, the riverbed, but there's no water flowing. And in chapter 3 of this article that we've been reading, we studied these kings from Manetho, right? Yeah, and we looked at the kings of Dynasty 18, which I was just showing you, actually. How did I get away from that? Right here. So these are the kings of Dynasty 18 on page 122 of the book of Mr. Fotheringham. What year was his book again? I've forgotten. But I mean, it wouldn't be hard to find out, I guess. But 38, 40, I think it's 39 or something somehow. But I don't actually think that because I don't know. It could have been 36. See what we can find here. But 1906. Oh, yeah, 1906. That's when he wrote that. Okay. This book was 1906. Egyptian chronology. Here we are. Dynasty 121, 122. So these are the kings of Dynasty 18, as given by Manetho, but passed on to us through the scholars of later times, one of whom was a Jew named Josephus, and the others who were Christians, Julius Africanus and, what's his first name, Flavius? It's Flavius Josephus, right. But Eusebius was another Christian who was, I don't think he has a first name traditionally. He's named Eusebius. Even Eusebius and Julius Africanus, I believe, come to us very often through another source called George Syncellus. But anyway, we have Eusebius and Africanus and Josephus for Dynasty 18, right, starting right here, partway down page 122 of Fotheringham, 1906. And, based on that, we added up all these years and we figured out a way, because there are duplicate kings mentioned in these lists, we figured out a way to exclude a certain number of kings from these lists and get a number that we could find as a total to the total number as for the total number of years here for this dynasty, right? Or at least from the time of the Exodus, for example. Or let's go back and take a look now at what we did say in that chapter, because I forget the actual details. But we looked at that and we saw, 164 years, there it is. From the Exodus to Ramesses I. That's what we did. Yeah, see, using all Manethan versions, we found 164 years could be found to agree. So we verified Manetho. We found great encouragement because we verified that Manetho gave us those amazing results. Now I'm thinking, if they're dating, okay, I've begun research on the city of Sodom, and so I can't get my mind off of it. But you know what I'm also researching? I'm researching tankless hot water heaters as another possibility. And I've just begun, well, I can't say yet because it would be premature, so I won't say anything more about that. But the tankless water heaters are possible as long as you can somehow soften the water sufficiently by some method. So you don't have to use the... I found out recently, you don't have to use water softeners that use salt. You can do salt-free. There are different salt-free water softening systems if you don't want to use salt. And there are various reasons for not using salt as a means of water softener or water softening. One of which is you don't waste any water like you do. I mean, you waste water when you use the salt-based water conditioners, and they have to be continually re-washed or whatever. You have to wash the unit continually. We used to have a water softener years ago, and it would cycle itself automatically to do automatic cleaning every so many hours or whatever, but I can't have that in my house because I've got a studio, recording studio. I don't want to have noise. So it's got to be, whatever it is, has to be quiet. But which is different. That's not the reason we got rid of it. The reason we got rid of it was because I wanted the calcium to be in the water. And then many years later, when I was beginning to take vitamin K2 with vitamin D, and I very unusually, I accidentally overdosed. It was completely off the charts how many units of vitamin D I was taking. And that caused me to overdose on calcium. But most people would never encounter this problem. But if you don't have soft water, if you've got calcium in the water and you take an immense amount of vitamin D, you'll be poisoned by the calcium. And vitamin D might even hurt you. I don't believe it will, unless you go more than a million units per day of vitamin D. But when you're taking any amount of calcium and you're taking a million units of vitamin D, you can overdose on calcium. That's the danger. It's a real danger, but only if you've got like calcium in your water and you're trying to, if you don't realize it, because I didn't realize, and I was dehydrated, which is what happens when you overdose on calcium, and I was drinking more water, which had immense amounts of calcium in it. You see, because I was dehydrated, I had to drink more water, but I kept taking the vitamin D in immense quantities at the same time because it was benefiting me so much prior to that. So, but at the point where I became saturated with too much vitamin D and calcium, I overdosed on a combination of D and calcium. But the calcium is what really was so phenomenally overdosed. And then, although the D also probably would have hurt me, or could have, but I don't think it would have, because I've read the research papers on vitamin D. You can take a million units a day. It's got to do with the calcium that overdoses, or that you can overdose on when you're taking vitamin D. That's the problem. So I'm not so, I mean, most of us need more vitamin D because we have vitamin D receptors in our intestines, about 6,000 units of vitamin D can be held in the intestines in those vitamin D receptors, 6,000 units per day, or 6,000 units of vitamin D in those receptors, right, can be absorbed or held in those vitamin D receptors in the intestines. So if there are 6,000 units capacity in the intestines, and there are known to be vitamin D receptors throughout the body, then the vitamin D probably is not possible to overdose on vitamin D without taking more than a million units per day. But that's only with the proviso that you're not taking too many other minerals or other things. Like, vitamin D is not a mineral, it's more like a hormone or something. But the vitamin D, the effect of vitamin D is that it facilitates the absorption of minerals through these vitamin D receptors. And the minerals that it facilitates, the main ones are calcium and magnesium and so on. So you could overdose on calcium. I don't think it didn't cause any diarrhea or anything. It just caused, let me think. Maybe it did. I can't remember that specifically, but I know it caused frequent urination. Much more frequent urination was caused, as well as, you know, loss of balance, and in walking around, I'd stumble around, and I was, you know, I still had a lot of capabilities, but I was sleeping. I think I slept more, but I slept for shorter periods because I had frequent urination, much more frequent than normal. My heart rate was very high, too. It was in the 90s at rest, when I was resting. It never went below 90. So that was the symptom of overdose on calcium. But so we saw the harmony between Manetho and the BG for Dynasty 21, right? And also, that's right. In 944 BCE, let's look that up, if we have a minute. That's in chapter 3, paragraph 9, where we talked about the fact that we could look at the dynasties in Manetho, and we could see that the beginning of Dynasty 21, and, you know, knowing the number of years of that dynasty, which we were able to determine, and knowing how many years were given by Manetho for Dynasty 22. In particular, though, the kings of that dynasty, who we call Shishak and Osorkon, right? 21 and 15 years, respectively. Those years, we were able to find agreement using all the information that we could glean with the date of the war in year 14 of Asa, from the Bible, where Zerah the Ethiopian, who corresponds to Zerah of the Ethiopian kings list, who is also Osorkon, as we saw from the other later kings on that list, one of whom was Zerah, Osorkon II. So by looking at the Ethiopian kings list, we identified Zerah the Ethiopian from year 14 of Asa as having died in the year 14 of Asa, which was calculated as 944, paragraph 9 of chapter 3. So we verified Manetho in that way also, because we got the year 1 of Smendes as 1115 using lunar alignments from the previous dynasty, which was Dynasty 20, and included Ramesses III, for example. But now we're in chapter 12, and we're looking at, we're going to end for today very shortly. But I can't wait to get back to my research. My research now is not just on the Egyptians right now, but because I've just had some work done in the plumbing in my house. And yeah, it was a great inspiration to me, because that work, I needed some work done. But getting that work done has now inspired me to do more research, and I've gotten back into the research of the plumbing. And the technology marches on. The prices go up, but the technology also marches on. And so what we can find is available today. There's far, and also the prices go lower on some of the new products. It's remarkable. So you can get, I'm just amazed, but still the prices are very high compared to what everything used to be. But it's important to get back out there and research from time to time on what new things are available in the technology and the supply lines, because they've improved also. So we've got some knowledge that we saw encouragement in Manetho, and partly because we adopted the relative dating of Krauss with regard to the lunar alignments of Dynasty 20, for example. That's it for today's study, little children. It's August 22nd, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 22:38 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now, and thank you for listening and watching. That was Chapter 12, Paragraph 3 of Trojan War,